Welcome to another episode of the Prepared Mindset Podcast, everyone. Welcome back if you are a returning listener, and welcome in if it's your very first time checking us out. Appreciate you guys. Happy to have all of you on board for this week's episode and discussion. And it's a crazy Tuesday. You know, I mean, it's probably not a secret. We record these a day or so in advance. You guys usually get them next day, but, you know, we're 5 weeks out, something like that, from the election. Today, we have news now that Iran is launching missiles at Israel, which, you know, if you guys are up on your geopolitical politics and impacts and goings-ons and whatever else, right, that's a pretty big deal. And in the past, right, we probably would have expected to see the United States take some sort of military action or come out with some statement against it or do something. With this administration being as weak as it is, there's been, at least to my knowledge, there's been very little to no comment by our leadership. I know President Biden he's around. And I only know that because I did see that with everything going on in the Southeast right now with Hurricane Helene, you know, with the impacted states in Florida and everything down there, he came out and said there's no resources to send. They won't be sending any federal relief or federal aid or federal help to those states because there's nothing to send, which is just hilarious. When you look at, I'm pretty sure it was $12 billion is the number we just sent to Ukraine. Again, more billions and billions of dollars more while we continue to struggle here on the U.S. soil. Our citizens, right, our tax-paying citizens and, you know, a healthy amount of illegals, right, are suffering under terrible conditions. I have a coworker that lives down that way who was just hopeful that she made it out of the area and flew up to Canada to stay with, to go see her daughter. And unfortunately, it's during all of this. So, you know, obviously, I don't know what else you can say except thoughts and prayers with those people. I know it's kind of a hollow, empty thing, but I mean, obviously there are a lot of efforts ongoing online to donate to those relief efforts. If you're local to the area and you can, there are drop-off points people are setting up for things like paper towel and toiletries and water and baby formula, baby food thing. You know, the essentials that people who have lost everything that they need, clothes, right? Clothes, undergarments, jackets, shoes, right? Things that people have lost everything. And it's terrible to see. It's great to see some communities coming together. But this is when, you know, the non-kinetic side of what we discuss here on this podcast every week really starts to show its value. And it's still, it's still underappreciated. People are never going to be as interested in those things as they are with shooting and training. And I'm not saying that, you know, you should feel bad about it. I fall into that category of people that I don't invest enough in water purification or backup power, off-grid power, or any of it. You know, I don't. We could always all do better. And fortunately, you know, knock on some wood here, I live in a state where we don't get too bad of extreme weather. I mean, we get some pretty gnarly blizzards, but our infrastructure here, at least in that regard, is that we don't experience that kind of, widespread failure. I mean, we did have some issues last year. It was a pretty big ice storm. I thankfully didn't experience anything. My parents' house did. They lost power for about 4 days, which is just miserable. I mean, at least you can sleep at night in the cold. Like, you can just add more blankets and stuff. It's not like when we lost power here this summer and it was just unbearable with the heat and everything. But yeah, so at any rate, prayers, thoughts to all those impacted. If you guys got family, I hope everything's okay. But we have another episode for you guys lined up this week. Rob Epifania is returning to the podcast. I had to look because I thought it was the end of last year, and I was actually incorrect. It was February of 2024. We had Rob on last. If you guys don't know Rob, he is a cadre member with Orion Training Group. Big fan of the guys over at Orion, and highly recommend you check out their entire offering of training and services. But Rob is an M-class shooter, great guy, very smart individual. If you haven't looked him up yet, I would recommend. He has free videos both through his website and through YouTube, where he goes over just a lot of really helpful information, things pertaining to dry fire and presentation and accuracy and consistency. Stuff that's actually going to make you better on the flat range. And thus off of the flat range as well. It's our responsibility, right, as trained individuals to hit the flat range, work on those skill sets, refine those skill sets, and then work into our independent training regimens, whether that's dry practice or live practice or whatever, work that into things like concealed carry or tactical shooting or whatever have you. But Rob's back. It's going to be great to catch up with him. The information that he was able to share on our first discussion was really cool, very valuable. We talked a lot about reloads and presentation and shooting and thought processing and things that, you know, they're acknowledged by pretty much anybody who has even looked into performance-based shooting and acknowledged that they need to work on it, that they need to grow, that there's areas for them to improve, right? But it's stuff that we don't, at least most of us, like speaking for myself, obviously, we have a hard time articulating those points. And when you hear somebody else say it to you, sometimes that's all it takes. And you go, well, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world, right? And you know, it just clicks hearing it. And then you're able to walk away from that, either a conversation in my case, or for you guys listening, you're able to walk away from that audio recording and go, hey, I'm going to try that, or I'm going to pause that right now when I got my earbuds in. I'm going to try dry firing that right now to see if what they're talking about makes sense the way I'm thinking about it in my mind, or if I need to try something different, whatever the case may be. So it was a great discussion. The last time we had Rob on, I have every anticipation that it's going to be even better this time around. Rob's a great, great guy. I'm looking forward to having him back on for a while now. But before we get to this week's discussion, you guys, you know how this deal goes. We are a sponsored podcast here. It's awesome. I'm grateful and I count my blessings every day that we have the opportunity to work with some really good companies and we get to do it our way. In this space and actually in the industry as a whole, if I can for just a moment, like, you guys know that some people's opinions are bought and paid for. You know that sometimes what you see is not always what you get. And you know that there's some very popular voices out there, or even some just mildly popular voices out there that are telling you that this brand is the way to go. These guys are great. Buy this product. It's outstanding. And then it's really not. They're just the company that had enough money to throw at a personality to tell you that what they do and what they have is the best, and that you should spend your money there because they say so. And the way we're actually happy to work with our partners is that we were customers of all of these companies before we were ever partners with them. So we know firsthand, and we've gotten to actually meet some of these people firsthand, right, that these are great companies. They make an outstanding product. And as people who have confidently spent our own hard-earned dollars on products from all of these companies, we know that, you know, hey, there is no problem with us recommending, hey, that you can go check these guys out. If you're looking for gear or night vision or kit or nylon or, I mean, whatever the case may be, right? You can go to these companies. You can spend your money confidently without having to worry about having a questionable customer experience or customer service problems if something should happen with one of the products that you purchase, or, you know, having like concealed details like country of origin or quality, or if there's some kind of, like a testing standard, right, that some of these companies have to adhere to for what they do. You don't have to worry about that because these companies are on the up and up, and they're ones that we are very, very proud to partner with. And we're very, very happy to be able that we get to put not just the name of the podcast on these relationships, but also personally. Like, I send close friends, I send family members to these companies to check this stuff out. And I feel every bit of confidence with that as I do with recommending you guys, all our listeners, to go check out these companies because of the amazing support and the amazing work that they do. So with that, I want to say thank you first to Custom Night Vision, you guys. Their website, customnightvision.com. If you've been listening for a while now, you know that Custom Night Vision has been a very, very big supporter of ours for the last year plus now. And they're an outstanding source of not only night vision products, but also night vision information. They have a great YouTube channel. Kevin does an outstanding job with those videos, answering questions around, you know, what housing is best, or if there are new housings on the market, what are they? What are their features? What's the pros? What's the cons? And answering some of those just very popular questions they get called with all the time, because, you know, for as small a world as night vision is, there is still a whole heck of a lot that many of us don't know. So we look to them as experts to be able to guide us. And to that point, the actual website, customnightvision.com, has a great chat function that's built into it. So if you get to the site and you're checking out the menu to build your own binocular housing, or maybe a monocular housing if you're looking for something like a PVS-14, just an entry-level green phosphor unit, and you have questions between Elbit or NNVT or Photonis or, you know, super gain or what any of these things mean, right? You can hit that chat function. You can actually reach out and you can talk to one of the team members over at Custom, whether it's Ben or Kevin or Trevor or one of the guys there. They're going to be able to give you some outstanding information and some great support, you guys. Their mission as a company is to create the most transparent buying experience that they can for you. They want to make sure that when you're committing your hard-earned dollars to getting into, I mean, honestly, some of the most expensive kit that you're really going to invest in, that you have a great experience, that you feel like it was worthwhile, and that you want to come back for more, because they're in business to be, you know, make money, be a business. And they do that by providing you guys the outstanding services and great products. Again, I can say that as somebody who went through them and ordered my first laser through Custom Night Vision back before I really had hardly any idea who they were. We've been able to refer a ton of our friends and family to these guys for great, tremendous service, and even some people on a business level too, which is always cool. And you can say, hey man, they're great to work with. We love those guys. Reach out, talk to them. Again, the website is customnightvision.com. Head over, check it out for yourselves. Also want to say thank you to 100 Concepts. Thank you to Jonah, Garrett, Pierce, the whole crew at 100 Concepts. Their motto is, do good, live dangerous, and be free. I'm pretty sure I nailed that one because I can never keep that stuff straight. But 100concepts.com is the website. They make some absolutely great products, from their scope caps to their hex caps, or if you take those two things, you put them together, you have their pro cap series. So if you're shooting something like a 1-6 or maybe a 3-15, we, you know, went out and hit the range this weekend, everybody there was running pro caps from 100 Concepts on all of our scopes. It was awesome to see. And you know what, you guys, they're very, very affordable, and the guys there, they actually listen to client feedback, which is why they work so hard to release products like their newly teased night cap, which is for night vision devices. So PVS-14 optic units like PVS-14s, MH1s from Low Light Innovations, or 1431s, anything that uses a PVS-14 optic is going to be able to take these. Really, really excited to see those pop out, you guys. And once more, the website, it's 100concepts.com. Head on over, check that all out today. You guys, great dudes, great business, making some awesome products. And finally here, we want to say thank you to the team over at RMA Armor. You guys, they're based out of Iowa. Website is armadefense.com, and they even hooked you guys up with a discount code, PreparedMindset5, to save you 5% off your order when you go to the website and check out all the good stuff they have in stock. Regardless, if you're looking for some very robust, very durable level 4 plates so you have maximum protection, or you're looking for something a little bit lighter, right? Like the plates that I'm running, they're level 3A plus special threat plates, they're multi-curve, they're 2.5 pounds a piece, you guys. They're super comfortable and very effective. They even have soft armor. They have everything in between, level 3, 3 plus. They sell helmets through the website, so if you're looking to get into a ballistic helmet, they have options there. They even have plate carriers, so you can literally pick up an entire package or multiple packages of their armor and plate carriers so that you and your loved ones are well prepared for whatever may come down the road. Again, you guys, it is rmadefense.com, discount code PreparedMindset5 to save you 5% off your order. So guys, you know, huge thanks to all of our sponsors. In addition, we do have a Patreon. If you guys want to support us, if you're looking for more information, maybe the Instagram content isn't really doing it for you, we have a YouTube channel and a Patreon that has access to videos. I just put up a blog post today. We have drills, there's target downloads, there's all kinds of good stuff on that. It's patreon.com/prepared_mindset_pod. Just one little way you guys can support us and what we're doing here, and get access to some additional content, or get access to the team here if you want to ask us some specific questions, you want to see a picture of Josh's feet, whatever the case may be. I'm not guaranteeing that, but I'm just saying there's a pretty good chance, you know, he'd do anything for a buck, or at least I'm told. So all that said, you guys, again, Rob Epifania is my guest this week. Great discussion last time he was on, and it feels like it was only a couple weeks ago, and then it feels like it was, you know, last year, and I still can't believe that we're already into October. 2024 has been a whirlwind in so many ways, for at least for us here, I'm sure probably for a lot of you as well. we're going to get into a lot of stuff this week with Rob talking about handgun work. This is especially after, you know, some of the discussions we had coming out of the HTA Range Day course, like where John was able to take a handgun class and come out and have a lot of good information to share with us. In addition to a lot of the individual training efforts that Josh and I have been putting in and the whole team's been putting in with our individual training time and range days and stuff over the course of the last, let me do the math here, 8 months. 8 months or so since we were last speaking with Rob and had him on the podcast. So if you guys enjoyed that discussion, I'm sure you're going to love this one as well. Should be a good time. And without any further delays here, I'm going to just bounce this on over to me and Rob. Here we go, guys. Welcome back, sir. How have you been?
I've been great. The weird lady has spoken. We are now recording.
Yeah, the weird voice that says that we're on the record or whatever people freak out about. Yeah.
Skynet.
Right. Yeah, which honestly, the longer time goes on, becomes more and more of a relevant concern with AI and drone technology and all, you know, all that good stuff.
You ain't kidding, man. I mean, the stuff we're seeing on Instagram now where it's like, here we go. Gunner sees the FedEx man.
Oh, yeah, your dog. Yeah. Honestly, yeah, that's the way to do it. The low tech analog home security system. Just get a dog, man.
Yeah. Just get a dog. Hey.
Yeah, it's and honestly, the more I meet people in the community and stuff, more people, I think, if for nothing else, the companionship. A lot of people own dogs. It's like, you know, I mean, Jared owns a cat. I don't know what the hell that's about, but you know, no
some
one's perfect.
Like cats, right? Man. My brother has a cat. Like, I'm not really a cat person. I don't mind them. Like they're. I mean, they're exceptionally intelligent. They're little killers. Like those motherfuckers.
Yeah, I am. I'm actually allergic. So like as a kid, I was fine with cats, but now because I can't touch them and then like rub my face or anything, I'm just like, you know what? Fuck these little assholes. Like I had a friend, my wife's friend had her cat like escape out their second story window because she left the window open. Like it was a good idea. And I think I made some joke. I was like, oh, just put the cat in a pillowcase and then whack it against the wall. It'll never do that again. And I thought it was funny. She didn't, didn't find it.
I could see why she may not have thought that.
Yeah. No, right. Yeah. No, I deserved the looks and everything, but yeah, I mean, the last time we chatted, we got into like a whole bunch of stuff, honestly, around the performance side with handgun and your videos and everything, which I watched. I didn't go through all of them, but I did work on a lot of that stuff. And actually, I have been able to consistently see some improvements with my performance. Although it's weird because it's like I see one thing improve, then I watch like something else get like a little bit worse. And I'm like, dude, I didn't have this problem before. It's like that ever growing struggle. Like, and even like contextually, you know, like in a repetition, drawing from the holster and trying to do more than one round, right? You know, like that, if it's not grip, then it's something else. And I guess that's probably the ever present battle, right? With trying to be, performing at a high level, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being consistent on demand.
Yep. The higher the level, the higher level you go, like everybody has that breaking point where things start to kind of fall apart. The question becomes at how difficult a level or how difficult a task does that start to happen?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a matter of continually training and like you said, finding the next thing and solving the next thing. So if you can learn, well, two things really. If you can learn how to redefine success to keep you going to get those small wins that you're looking for in the short term while you solve the issue that needs to be overcome, that will help you continue to get rewarded for the small wins that you get, you know, in a every session basis. You should be getting some sort of small win. So redefining success is one of them. And understanding this, if you look at every new problem that comes as success from the prior issues that you've encountered, you basically become unstoppable. Like
Yeah. It's like you're it's like a it's a perspective thing. Is that yeah. Because that's like honestly some of the stuff it's like banging my head against the wall, honestly. And I'm sure other people feel this way because you get to a certain point and you're like, I'm fighting really hard to shave like a tenth of a second off of whatever and honestly it's weird because like I'll sit here and I'll dry fire for like 20 minutes 40 minutes an hour and I can get my reload from a fully extended position just under a second, and then when I get on the range never happens. It's never that quick on the range. It's I couldn't even tell you why.
So let me understand the context of this. When you're saying under a second, we start aimed on target, right? The beep goes off. You do the reload, and you've pressed the trigger before the beep is complete.
When you say the beep.
Like, so you have a part-time beep, right?
Yeah.
You have 1 second part-time.
I see. Yeah. Set it at a 1 second part. Yeah. So before the second beep is completed. Yes.
You've pressed the trigger.
Yes.
Okay. So what's your best in live fire with the same kind of con with the same kind of
Oh,
exercise?
dude, like 1/6. I don't understand. It's like I feel like I'm going as fast as I can, and I don't know if it's I'm nervous because Josh is standing next to me
Of course.
or what the hell the issue is. Like I had just practiced it like Friday night, and then we went out on Sunday morning. We went out for a buddy's birthday on the range, and I was like, let me see cold how I can do with this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna crush it. This is gonna be great. And I was like, what was that? He goes, like 1/6/5. I'm like, dude, like no way, there's no way that was right. And yeah, so it's
So we got a second to go to get to my personal best, huh?
yeah, it's pretty far off. Yeah.
I'm at a 0.65 for personal best, but that was when I was, again. So here's something to think about, right? So 1.6, were you really trying to shoot alphas, or were you really trying to shoot? What were you shooting? What target were you shooting?
It is the jawless hog tag. It's like an A zone target sort of. It's like a silhouette, and it's they have it on HRT's website, and
Taking a look
it's like
now.
a silhouette with like it shows like so like the heart and lungs and stuff kind of imposed behind it. So it's not like the most competitive of targets. It's more of a self-defense target, but we use it a lot. I have a bunch of them.
So what were you trying to accomplish? You were trying to make sure you were you trying to get in the heart? Were you trying to hit the target? Like, what were you trying to do?
In the heart.
In the heart specifically. Yes?
Yeah.
And you wonder why it's a 1.65.
Well, yeah. I mean,
So think about this,
is
right? Think about
that, yeah.
this, right? A couple, which kind of explains some of the things we're talking about. The heart, what, about a 3-inch target? Does that sound right?
A little bit, I think it's a little bit bigger, maybe 4 inch. Yeah, like 4 inches as a
Okay.
circle,
Well,
it's a
how
little
far
bit.
were you from the target?
About 5 yards.
5 yards for a 4-inch shot off a reload,
Yeah.
and you expect to get under a second.
I don't know. I was hoping I would.
I'm just saying, like,
Yeah.
no, and I'm not saying that to be mean. Like, it's when we like you're shooting a reasonably small target, trying to go for high speed. Like, now, what are you doing when you dry fire?
It's usually it's usually one of those scaled cardboard like Ben Stoger deals, like I think it's the IPSC. Yeah, one of those guys.
Okay, the USPC.
Smaller.
This is a half scale.
I have a third scale one that I'm
Okay.
usually, I don't know, maybe like 6 feet from. So I don't know if it's not quite like
So
a 6 inch, 10 yard, but
6 feet on a third scale target. It's not exact, but
yeah.
it's supposed to represent 18 feet. And the target zone for a USPSA target is 6 by 11.
Is it? Okay. Yeah.
That's the A zone, right? The
That's the
whole
A zone,
target is
right?
bigger, of course. But
Right.
so you're so so understanding this, what's happening is, not that you're incapable of getting at a second or under a second, but you're making the target much harder than you're used to training with. For one,
Yeah,
right?
I hadn't really
Two,
thought about that.
two, right. So again, we talk about redefining success, right? For you at the moment, redefining success might be, can I hit the entire, like what I do with people, this allows them to release some more ability. Like put the target like right in front of you. Put it at 2 or 3 yards. Like take out the accuracy component temporarily to get comfortable with doing this at the speed that you've been trying to train at. Right? The other thing to think about too is how accountable are you for the hits on the third scale?
That's true. I mean, with dry practice, it's harder. It's, yeah.
So there's okay. So here, this is a great segue into dry fire. Hey,
Yeah.
awesome. Okay, let's give the viewers some shit to let's think about. All right, let's talk about let's see, dry fire rules. Let's talk about this. Actually, no, let's talk about calling shots. Okay.
Okay.
This is a great conversation. And this is one we just talked about in the class I did with Mason Lane, and I taught a class last week to 13 or 14 students. So and this was one of the blocks of instruction. So what do you think shot calling is?
Is that, I mean, I assume it's just calling your shot like a zone and that's where you're going to hit
How do you do
it.
it? If you
Yeah,
had
so
to
like,
describe to me, if you had to describe to me how you know, now you can't see your hits, but you have to describe to me how you determine that you fired a good shot.
it, I mean, I guess ideally it would be based off of your own introspective analysis of what you read out of your own sight and grip.
When?
When you broke the shot.
So you're saying when the trigger broke, right?
Yeah.
If I'm understanding you correctly, hold on here. Let me pull out my fancy little pea shooter here. Little Gerson tip-up barrel. This is actually marketed towards ladies. That's why it's like pink. Tips up the barrel, and you could load the mag and then just pop, put one round in the chamber and literally pop it down. It's kind of cool. But I use this, since I don't use this for anything right now, I use it as a my Zoom lecture. Okay, so you're saying now you're saying when the shot when you break the trigger, that's where your sight or dot was. That's where you think the shot went.
I mean,
It doesn't
yeah.
sound like you're 100% sure that
I'm
don't.
not.
And I'm
I don't
not
know that
being
I'm.
again. I'm not
Yeah.
being mean. This is learning for everybody. So
Right, right.
your candor or your honesty is gonna help other people here, because I'm sure other people are like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, right? And that's listen, at one point I was the same way. So
Yeah.
we all learn one way or the other. Okay, so now let's define. So you define shot calling. Where I think the shot went when the bullet left the barrel. Let's say that. Okay, how can we be sure? Like, what are the ways that we can use as ways to kind of estimate when this happens, right? There's three ways. Okay, three ways that I teach, I should say. And obviously there might be other ones that I don't know about. One is, like you said, the trigger breaks. So the trigger breaks. Okay, I kind of feel my finger hit the rear word most travel of where the trigger goes. Okay. That way is one method. That way is the fastest, right? So by the time your finger hits the rear word of travel, the bullet has just about started to leave the barrel, right? So
Right.
we can use that as a method. Wherever the dot was on that target, we can assume or we can make a reasonable guess that that's about where it's going to be. That's
Right.
the fastest. The disadvantage to that one is sometimes you could do it a hair early. You can think just like anticipation of a shot, right? You can
Yeah.
think it's you can think the shot is about to go off, and I think it's going to go off now, right? You
Yeah, and
can
you
look between
flinch or move or
flinch or
something,
move
change
or
something.
entirely different spot. Okay,
Yeah.
that's one way. That and so the question would be, where can we use that effectively? What kind of target do you think would be a smart use of that fast, but not necessarily 100% guaranteed?
I
Easy
don't know.
targets. Easy targets.
So, like, you'd
Right?
say it's being easy,
Three
like.
yard, a 3 yard full size target,
Oh,
like,
okay.
you know, I'm talking USPSA here. So 6 by
Okay.
11, like we have room in case we start to leave the target early, that we're not going to drag it all the way off the target. Right?
Right,
Does that make sense to you so far?
yeah.
So that's one way we could do it. Okay. The other two ways are the ways that I do it currently. Method number two is instead of trigger break, we can go off of trigger lift. So meaning when I fire that shot, the shot breaks, the gun starts to recoil. In recoil, I'm resetting the trigger. Okay. It's not a pin and reset thing. It's as soon as the recoil is happening, my finger is, I actually do what's called over resetting the trigger. I don't reset to the wall. Like I don't reset exactly to the wall. I actually over reset because then you have less of a chance of having trigger freeze or short stroking the trigger. So that's a common thing. Competitive, more competitive shooters will you'll over reset the trigger a little bit so that you can make sure that any sort of tension does not manifest in trigger freeze. Okay, but that we so now that trigger lift we can use as a an identifier that the shot has gone off, the bullet has left the barrel, and I can do whatever I want at that point. I can assume that the shot has gone in that general direction. Does that make sense to you so far?
That hearing you explain that actually makes it sound like that's probably a better way, just because
Yes and
well,
no.
if you're introducing that that erroneous not that extraneous motion or slight movement, that actually feels like it would probably be a better indicator, like real world.
I do think it's, I think it's a little more positive. The downside to this method is there's a quote unquote time cost to it. Okay, now the time, now so think about this. Trigger break, like it's as soon as it breaks, the bullet's just left the barrel. You can do something, right? The recoil cycle of a firearm is typically 0.06 to 0.07, 6 to 7 hundredths of a second. If you're going off of trigger lift, you're probably taking somewhere in the realm of about half that. So you're losing 0.03, let's say. It's a time loss, but what do you do? Right? What do you do to make that time up? You just move faster to the next thing. Now, if I were doing a transition, instead of getting that 0.03 earlier, I'm just going to move a bit faster to the next spot. And
Transition
that's
more
going to make
quickly,
up
yeah.
that time. Yeah. So that method is that's what I use currently, and that's one of the two I use currently. This method works really well for dry fire, right? We don't have recoil, so this works really well in dry fire to make sure I'm not moving the gun before the shot has quote unquote broken. Does that make
This
sense to you so
Yeah,
far?
this you're talking about the reset method that we're
Correct.
talking about. That's what you
Trigger
okay.
lift. Yep. So there's a common thing here where on trigger break, it could be one, two, three, four. Whereas if I'm going off of the lift of it, one, two, three, four. You see what I was doing there?
So
Right. People, go ahead.
does it I guess behoove people when they're when you're working on this, right, to like. And I know you shoot like a Beretta
Nah, not
or kind
anymore.
of
I
platform.
shoot the same company, Gersan, but the 2011s. So I run their 2011s now.
So do you have what so with those you still get like a dead trigger. You can like work that trigger. Okay. It's like the one downside. Like Glocks are like the perfect pistol aside from that one thing. Not
There's
really. I know
two
there's a
things you
lot of
could do for
issues,
that,
but
by the way.
well, I have a dry fire mag, which it was honestly a decent $100 investment during COVID because it saved me a bunch of money. It's not perfect because it's really hard to tune it to get like a 1-to-1 with your trigger. And that's like my 45 that I shoot is a it's a completely factory trigger. And
Glock
I
21,
got
right?
it. No, I'm sorry, Glock 45. So it's
Glock
a 9.
45. I'm sorry. I'm the
But
say I'm thinking 45 caliber,
oh
not
yeah.
45.
So at some point. The little, I don't know if you ever played with those dry fire mags, but I think I shot the spring out of it like across my basement, the spring that was the closest to my factory weight. So now I use like the next one up and I'm like, oh, it's kind of like resistance training. I don't know. I didn't really want to spend the money on another spring kit, but
So there's two things to do with that. Two things you can do with Glocks, and anybody listening who shoots a Glock, which is probably a bunch of people in your podcast,
yes.
that would probably be, yeah, this is probably who I'm speaking to. There's two things to do. One, you could take a piece of cardboard or a zip tie and kind of put it between the breech face, and it holds the slide open a little bit.
Yep.
What that's going to do, that's going to give you the mushy trigger that's light, and it's up to you. In either case, it's up to you to make sure you press the trigger with the appropriate amount of force. That's one method, and the other method is the first press is the real press, and you just move your finger far enough to over reset the trigger a little bit and press with the same amount of effort that you would normally. And so this is that second one is from Robert Vogel, right? So I trained with him in 2018. He's still a friend of mine. He's actually coming on. Actually, my group doesn't know this yet, but he's coming on one of my group calls in 2 weeks. So,
Oh, cool.
super super nice guy, really charismatic, like and just a good, like, he was one of the first ones that I got into training with. And he was one of the first ones I asked a ton of questions, and he took the time to answer every single one of my questions. But that was his thing with dry firing a Glock. Like, for him, it's press the trigger, and he actually just did a video on it. Actually, I'll send it to you here in the chat so you can link it if you want to. I just saw him post about it today. I said, oh, that's going to be a great topic for us to talk about.
Yeah.
So let me
It's
see.
well, and it's funny to me that, I mean, because this, like, there's nothing that we just talked about. There's all three of those methods, none of those
Oh, I didn't get
are,
the third yet. Yep.
oh, we didn't get to, I'm sorry. Okay. So we talked about two, that are both very effective, and neither involve like some of these super, like, I have a couple of friends, that I shoot with. They're like, oh, anytime there's that new gadget that's going to help you, right? Like, the Mantis or the dry fire mag or the smart dry fire mag, whatever. They're like, I gotta get that because that's what's gonna help me. And talked to one friend, he's, was having issues like just picking up his red dot sight. And I shouldn't say it, like just picking up his it, there's a learning curve. We all went through it,
Fingers, palm, pressure, leverage, baby.
and I was like, dude, it's just dry fire. Like, just do some reps, man. Like, pick a feeling and repeat that like 20 times. And if at the end of that you still can't like do it, then change something and do that. Like, guess and check. And if you've got more time than you do money, like, just experiment until you figure out what works for you. That's what I did. He opts for things like the Mantis system and for more classes and stuff. And it's like, cool. If you, I mean, both work, I guess. I always like the introspective method a little bit more.
My thing about, right, well, for one, we talked about the presentation last time, right? If I remember correctly.
I believe we did. Yeah.
Fingers touch, palm touches, apply pressure, leverage with the elbows, right?
Mm-hmm.
If anybody is having a problem with the red dot, that is one of the best solutions you can use. It's going to solve it because your grip is going to be ready early, the gun is locked in place, and then all you have to do is bring your gun to your eyes. Huge, huge difference in finding the dot quicker for anybody who's listening to that. Secondly, when it comes to dry fire tools, aids, the way that I say this to people is this: if it keeps you training when you otherwise would not normally, it's
Yeah.
a valuable tool to you. If
Sure.
not, your
Sure. Yeah.
gun making the visual connection between what your gun is doing, like where your gun is, what your dot is doing, and your eyes, like, that's going to give you the biggest return. There is something that I do recommend to people if you happen to have like an Oculus Quest or anything like that, the Ace VR training. That in itself is actually valuable, in my opinion.
Oh, I've seen videos of that shit. That stuff's crazy. Like, what you're able to do, like, you can. I used to think it was just competitive stuff, like running courses of fire and stuff. And then one of the guys actually took the Orion class with us in May, shared a video. You can do, like, they have all sorts of shit you can do. Room clearing. I mean, it's just, it's insane,
Dude,
the amount of options now.
the thing about this, right? So it is dry fire in the sense, they have it's dry fire. Obviously, there's no actual movement of the gun, but a couple things you get from this that you don't get in normal dry fire. You get actual feedback on what your hits were that you don't have to make the mental connection with. So I thought this was that, and it'll actually give you the results. Like, it'll tell you hit Alpha Charlie or whatever have you, right? That is important. The second thing for me that I notice is tremendous is you can practice moving targets. So swingers,
Oh, yeah. Yep.
bobbers, which are up and down, all different types of moving targets that you wouldn't normally have access to unless you had the resources for it. So, like, I have a Targets USA swinger and activator kit, so I practice with that. But this is exceptionally effective for those types of targets, because you're also getting feedback. And that brings us to shot calling method number three. So Ace VR has this this ability to do this. Shot calling method number three is dot lift or sight lift. So where the dot or sight was when it started to move up through or off the target. Okay. That is the most, to me, that's the most positive. Like, because there is no mistaking, like, if especially if you're staring at a small spot at the target and you happen to see the dot in some place and all of a sudden it darts upward, you can pretty much assume that within a 2 to 3 inch area that that is where the shot went.
See, and I've done that with practice. Like when I got my first red dot, I thought about that. I was like, that's probably a good way to at least like I worked out trigger pull a lot, like trying to see how much movement of that dot I could eliminate when breaking my shot.
So, like, for instance, like watching this, and everybody not going to be able to see this, but I have my finger, like your finger's floating around, right? It's floating around, and all of a sudden it starts to lift up. Like, now for the viewers, that it lifted up through the middle of the A zone. We can assume that's an alpha, right? Right. We can assume that, and it's probably going to be, right? Now, let's say we have it floating around. All of a sudden, as we're pressing the trigger, there's like that little check mark off to the left or the right side, right? We could assume what do we think that happened there?
Charlie, maybe a delta, depending on
Correct. In
the
our
angle.
case, right? We can see that happen. And when that dot starts to move up, that sight starts to move up, the bullet has left the barrel because the bullet leaves the barrel before we even feel any sort of recoil impulse on the firearm, right? So that is positive and it's visual. So once you get very in tune to understanding that, it becomes hard to unsee, right? And here's the, so here's a simple exercise that people at home can do. This works great with steel, but you can use it with paper also. So with steel, what we do in a class is we have the students aim on the target, right, on the piece of steel, and just shoot a couple shots. And the whole point of that is to pinpoint when the dot or sight starts to move up through the target. And if it moves up straight through the steel, you're probably going to hear a ding, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because
So that's
you're just getting recoil, you're not getting like a side to side
right. It's going straight up. There's no deviation. It's going straight up through the steel. Chances are, like, you hit the steel, and then you're going to see maybe specifically where on the steel it hit. Now, that's one. Number two is you aim just off to the side of the steel or the paper target, and you shoot into the dirt, and you just try it again. Pinpoint where the dot or sight started to lift. You will probably notice that where it started to move is where the corresponding hit in the berm is, right? Especially if you have like a sand or a dirt berm, you're going to see the little splash in that spot where the dot started to move up. Right. So that's one on through and then off. So we know what it looks like when it's not on. And then the third one is what's called a purposeful makeup shot. So I start aimed in the dirt, fire the shot, put my eyes on the steel, bring the gun onto the steel, and shoot and watch it lift through the steel. This is to simulate, like, if you were in a competition, you had a shot where the dot wasn't on the target, you're able to recognize it, correct for it, and then be able to hit the steel quickly.
Now that's an interesting way of working through that. I would not have normally thought of that, like simulating an intentional miss.
Right. That's a Steve Anderson thing. That's where I learned that from. Steve Anderson, great coach in the competitive shooting world. Also great mental coach too. Speaking of
Well,
which, another special
honestly,
guest on my podcast.
yeah, I mean, so much of that stuff is more, it's so much more mental, like just like staying on top of everything. And we talk a lot about like, and obviously I've spent in the last I don't know, 6 months, like I did a 3 day class with Jared and Jason, and then I was at the HTA event last month and did a day and a half CQB class. So we talked to like tons of work on mental processing, but like it's for as good as you can get at it in certain disciplines like room clearing, I still am not that good at it with applying it quickly in my shooting. Specifically, like it's better with a rifle. Maybe that's just because the platform is easier, or
More
it's simply
experience,
easier.
more training. It is easier to operate too. Like a rifle's easier to shoot than a pistol, for
Yeah,
sure.
and I mean, like the handgun stuff has gotten better. I want to say like I haven't gotten any better, but it's one of those things where it's far less forgiving. Like when you make small mistakes, and it's usually just like, at least for me, think about it, and then like next rep is better because now you're thinking about it. It's not automatic where some other things might be.
I mean that could definitely happen, and that's where you want to prompt yourself. So if you're working on a specific thing, you're going to ask yourself like after action questions is what I call them. So an after action question, let's say we're working on our grip, right? Three after action questions that I would ask myself. End of every rep, stop, stay on target, hold on target. Is my support hand gripping as tight as it can? Right? And when you prompt in your head, you try to do it. So I would try to grip harder with my support hand if I could. And if I wasn't doing it, I would be able to grip harder, right? Does my firing hand feel comfortable to me? Meaning it's not too loose, it's not too tense. Like it feels like it's in place and it's where I would feel mentally comfortable with it. Right? I kind of put my brain on my firing hand, just kind of check it. Does it feel good? Do I notice it's a little too much? Do I feel like it's too loose and I would want to tighten up as I'm shooting? And then the last thing at that time would be like my shoulders. Are my shoulders like in a neutral position? They're not like, I don't find they're like hunched up or they're pushed forward too much or whatever. I would just kind of check my shoulders and see if I can get it in a little bit of a better place if I needed to. And that would be it. Then I end the rep, start the next one, do the same thing at the end. Because over time, by asking yourself those questions every time, it becomes subconscious eventually because you're constantly checking it, addressing it if it needs to be. And then it ends up happening. So, if you look at like an after action with a gunfight, right? So like when I used to teach in the tactical world with Chris Fry and MDTS, we would have the after action questions there too. Is he down? Is he alone? Should I move? What's the status of my gun? Am I hurt? And all those questions would prompt you to do this, whatever this assessment was. So you'd follow the target down. Is he alone? You'd start to look around you. Should I move? It would be a contextual. If I'm behind cover, I really may not need to move, right? But if I'm out in the open, I might want to move. And in a class with people around you, it's take a step left or right or whatever. What's the status of my gun? Make sure I don't have a malfunction. Top off if I have to. And am I hurt? Like we would in our case, we would like kind of wiped it, like just wipe the center of our chest down, our center mass, and make sure, like look at it, feel if there was any, blood or whatever. Like that would be the idea. But all those after action questions, they prompt that, and then over time, it just becomes a second nature thing to do that.
And so a lot of that stuff too is it, like I'll try new stuff as I pick up things when I see new videos and stuff. Like, I think it was, I want to say it was Will, he's doing more videos now on some shooting things. And
Good.
I don't know that I'd ever heard anybody talk about, because I thought it was very, I'm gonna say weird, not in a bad way, but like, I guess, or unique. Like I never heard it before. Was he talked about, firing hand and trying to eliminate tension specifically with the middle finger, I think, because of some kind of like, I mean, I'm trying to remember because this was a bit ago, but like some kind of sympathetic response when we pull the trigger finger
I can
that,
tell you what it is.
yeah. And
He
I was
might have
like,
got, I don't know that he got it from me, but that's something I talk about often. You could try this with me. People who are listening, try this with me. If you hold your hand out here and I move my pinky, notice how the index finger can stay relatively still. But
yeah.
if I move my ring finger, the index finger stays relatively still. But when I move my middle finger, it's like really hard for me to stop that from happening. Right?
Yeah.
So the fuck you finger. The middle finger, depending on how you want to edit this, right? That's the one that is the most responsible for index finger, trigger finger tension. That's the one that'll lock it in place when it gets too tight. And you could practice that, by the way. You can practice that isolation if you want to. So like these are grip keepers, like the Grip Keeper store is Rob 10, by the way, 10% off. You can hold He has different models. Like this is just a regular, just a grip, and it's got springs in here. And I can hold this closed, and I could practice working my index finger while holding it closed. Right?
Oh, okay.
That you
That's
can teach yourself to do that, but the middle finger really is what affects the trigger finger the most. That's why for me, I tell people ring and pinky pressure means I can grip as hard as I want with these two fingers, and I have full dexterity of my trigger finger.
it's always that's weird stuff. Like,
Yeah.
I used it. Honestly, I used some of this kind of shit like at work calls when we try to do like those stupid team building exercises where they're like, everybody go like a list a random fact. And I'm like, oh, I did, like, oh, your ring finger only has muscle tissue on one side, so that's why you can't lift it as high. Like, if you lay it flat on your desk, you can lift all your other fingers up, but when you go to lift
That's
your
an
ring
interesting one.
finger.
I never knew that.
I learned that when I was learning marching percussion, and we had a very like an old, very old school guy. When you talk about traditional grip with your left hand, they're like, why do you make your pinky finger curl under your ring finger some odd contorted way? And it's like, oh, because there's not enough muscle tissue there, and you want to be able to support the stick. And I was like, I'm never gonna fucking forget that shit. That's weird as hell. And yeah, that was coming up on 20 years ago. It's those weird things. I'm gonna like put that in my back pocket, and I'll probably whip that out somewhere for something. But it's interesting when you start to figure out like the physiology behind some of these things, like that we like spend hours and hours of our lives trying to figure out grip and stuff, and it's just those weird little things that help with forward progress.
Oh yeah. And it's often playing around with different things that give us that insight too. So like even the position of the gun in the hand, which I talked about last time, right? Where we kind of trace the forearm bone up and into the palm and put the back strap of the gun there from a much more secure trigger press, right? That came from starting strength, the lifting program.
Oh, really?
So I read the book. I was doing the program at the time, and what it said with an overhead press, like lifting over barbell overhead, is instead of grabbing like normal straight, you actually curl your fingers inward, right? And when you curl your fingers inward, you kind of address the bar, so to speak. You wrap underneath, and you actually have your wrists at a slight angle so that the bar can sit on that forearm bone. Because when the bar sits on that forearm bone, it gives you the best power transmission.
No, okay, that makes sense. I would never have thought of that.
No, but it was I was doing it and I'm like, man, maybe there's something to how we grip a handgun that kind of applies to this concept. And that's when I started teaching it like that.
I mean, I think what is that, like the kinesthesiology or something, like the science
Yeah,
behind trying to
kinesiology.
like I started I got a new holster from like US Duty Gear, right? And just because how they make it versus Safari Land, like I can actually mount it with a negative cant, positive.
You're
So the
inward, outward. Yeah, I
yeah,
understand.
so like it actually the draw stroke, instead of having to be literally straight up, is slightly backwards the way that your forearm and elbow work at that draw height.
So you're saying like this, like the muzzle's pointing a little forward. Yeah, that's a cant. Yeah, that's a cant. That's common in competition too, by the way.
Yeah,
You'll
and
see
it's such a
guys have that.
small thing. Because I know last time we talked about Canon magazines for reloads and stuff,
Yep.
and I'm still trying to get Josh to adopt this. He is very resistant to change. But I run like angled mag pouches. Like I'll never go back, or at least
Nope.
one, like a speed reload pouch. I'll always run at least one that way. Because then it's a little bit more natural. It's a little bit quicker. The biggest thing for me was just finding like a consistent
Consistency.
like index point to make it try and like feel the same every time. And when I can do that, that's when I have like my best times in terms of being able to do that reload. Well, at least with getting the mag out of the pouch.
Remember, so and remember, we have to redefine success for you. So next time you go out, I want you to have the target literally like close, 3 yards. And don't redefine success as I'm going to get the fastest reload I can do. Don't worry about the hits in the short term. Okay. Just drive that time down. Once the speed becomes normal, now we're going to start to figure out, well, what do we have to do to get the hits? That's a common thing. Like a lot of people, they try to work on the accuracy, speed is fine, accuracy is final, slow is smooth, smooth is fast, all that bullshit. Like, you have to, the speed has to feel normal to you, and in the beginning, it means you have to fail, right? You have to either fail, like you have to fail, or you have to redefine success so that you continue working on figuring it out. You will generally get the speed first, and then you will solve for the hits in order to get progress. Like that, anytime that I've gotten progress, that's I've just been pushing, 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 like getting totally uncomfortable, and then the speed becomes normal, and well, let's see what we can do to get better, get the hits I want,
See, and
right?
that philosophy makes more sense to me. I've actually come across more people than I thought where they do it like backwards, where the primary goal or primary metric of success is purely accountability for your shot, for shot placement and marksmanship. I even went out for with a separate group of guys, I don't know, April-ish maybe, I don't remember, and they didn't use a shot timer for anything. And I was like, why would you not use a shot timer to at least measure your performance on demand and things? Like, I don't, I'm not hating on the method altogether. I just find it odd when, people, it's so common when you're looking at trying to measure performance.
Well, it's also, again, redefining success. Like, you can define success in the moment as I want to get all alphas, or I want to get a certain number of points. Like, there are times where that's relevant. Like, when you're trying to build consistency and you're trying to, especially with steel, like there was a point in time where, again, it's another Steve Anderson drill that we did in his class, and it was we did plate racks on the move. Anywhere from 7 to 15 yards, and the goal, you go forward, you went forward, you went right, left to right, you went back, you went right to left. So it was a box, and the goal was not time, it was how many out of 24 did you get, right? And that, so it just, it's again, it's just a definition of success. It doesn't, for someone who tends to get a little undisciplined, right, you can use that as a metric of success to help them gain the consistency and the discipline they need. By the way, I got to 85 plates in a row
Before you
before
missed.
I counted it. I counted it because it was just like, for me, accuracy comes pretty naturally, but redefining success based on what you're trying to accomplish matters, but when we're talking about going faster, like typically speaking, the speed comes first, and then you have to figure out how to get the accuracy at speed,
Well,
right?
and I
Oh,
also think that
go ahead.
when people have that conversation, though, too, it's, I think people think about speed, it means doing everything fast. And in reality, I think that if you isolate one or two things and do those very consistently and very efficiently, and you have that strong byproduct of speed in those areas, like that's, I think, when people would see more, or at least for me, like working on transitions, right? Like really just spending time without any trigger work, forcing myself to get away from my optic and lead with my eyes and, left to right, right to left, or, three targets, four targets, whatever the case may be, forcing yourself to do that rather than think about it in terms of like, keeping your eyes through the optic. And then when you transition, everything's happening at once and you got to do everything quickly and you're not ever establishing, I'll say, like even a decent sight picture, right? You're just trying to do everything quickly all at once, and it becomes very chaotic.
Well, it comes down to a couple of things. One is understanding what needs to happen, like what order of operations has to happen. So like a transition, right? In a transition, like you have to call the last shot good, whatever that is. Eyes have to get to the next spot on the next target. Gun has to track, right? Gun has to exit the target that you're shooting, right? In recoil, it's starting to move. There's a certain level of movement depending on the width of the transition. There's an entry component. There's a visual confirmation aspect that you know the shot is going to be good. Then there's the trigger press and so on and so forth. So understanding the components of that is critical. So like when I do transition breakdowns, I break it down into the transition exit, right? Where you're learning how to aggressively move the gun off the target. The entry, which is my vision, is already fixated on the target, and all I'm doing is bringing the gun to my face and pressing the trigger as soon as I see the color red or green. There's return and release, which means when we're firing two or more shots on a target, we have to have an active, a recoil control component for the shots that are not the last shot, right? So typically, competitions, two shots, right? So the first one has to be returned back to the target where we're looking, and then the second shot has to basically bounce and exit without putting the gun back on target for the third shot. What I would call in a competition like scenario, over follow through. I'm following through back to the target that I'm shooting when I could be leaving, as long as it's a good shot. And then it's putting it all together. And then the other component too is once you understand the sequence that has to happen, it's learning how to react to the last event with the next event sooner. Right. And if you think about shooting, performance-based shooting, it's all about how can I get to the next shot faster? Sooner, which means we have to be able to respond to what just happened and initiate the next action. So as soon as I know that second shot is good, my eyes are already leaving, the gun is starting to follow, right? Everything is happening as close together as it possibly can so that we can now gain all that time so that we can shoot as comfortably as we want to.
And that's a it's an interesting concept when you can even flip it backwards too, at least from like a diagnosis perspective after the fact. When we look at strings of fire, at least in my experience, I found success with this, and this is actually something I took from music, right? Was like, don't look wherever you're having the issue. Like, you can look at it and maybe that is there's a problem there, I don't know, right? But look at what came before it. It's not always like, hey, that third target's not what's fucking you up. Maybe it's something you're doing with the second target. Like, back up and look at that. Even though you got, maybe good hits or whatever, what's happening there? Look at that, and maybe you realize your exit sucked, or your movement with your feet suck, or that planned reload is not going as well as you thought, and you're arriving late and trying to rush through your process or something. Like, it's a lot of it's mental, honestly. I mean, it's I find it really interesting when you start getting into like thought processes and introspection, how much you can fix just by shifting, the way you
Awareness,
think about it.
being aware. That's what you just mentioned there is what I call disruption, by the way. Whenever you're doing whatever performance it is, and this is musical, this is anything. If you imagine that your performance is like a lake, right? It's nice, peaceful, right? You got the sun out, everything, right? Disruption is you taking a rock and throwing it into the water, right? When we throw a rock into the water, there are two things that happen. The first thing that happens is what?
Splash.
Splash. What's the second thing that happens as it goes in?
Ripples.
It ripples, right? So splash and the splash is whatever the event is, whatever it is. It could be a thought, it could be a little bit of something you notice, it could be whatever. And the ripple is the after effect of it. Now your mind in that moment is what takes that rock and turns it into a pebble or a boulder. Right? Boulder's gonna snow like ripple big, and it's gonna translate into getting messed up in the rest of the performance, right? A pebble, whatever the event is, little splash, back on task. And it could go both ways too, right? It could be something really didn't go how you want it to, and you kind of got kind of fixated on it. Could also be something went fucking awesome, and you're like, yes, that was amazing, and then you forget to do the rest of it. Like, I've had it happen both ways. I've had it happen where sometimes something will just, I'll notice something and it's like it gets in your head and you kind of follows you around if you're not careful. And I've had it where like, fuck, man, like that was really good. And then the rest of it is like I just stop paying attention to what I need to pay attention to. You don't stay in the moment.
I have the first problem a lot. Like, if I fuck up, like, I usually let that shit run with me for hours before. And I feel like we talked about this
We
the
probably
last time
did.
you were on too. Yeah, like, being able to, and I see it with my buddies and stuff when we go train or go shoot. And I'm like, man, it's why we're here. Like, you made mistakes. Like, it's okay. And I'm saying it like I don't fucking struggle with it worse than what I just at that particular time, they're learning stuff that I've already overcome. So it's easy for me to sit there and say it, but I try to at least try to at least share that experience. Like, hey man, I understand, I know. And I also hold myself to whatever standard, maybe it's unrealistic, and let the stuff bother me, but that will cause more issues down the line for you
Yeah.
than if you just let it go right now.
You need to be able to let go, like have a short memory for what happened, but have like remember the lesson, what it's teaching you. Because the quicker you can get past the emotion and into the how do we solve this, right? The more productive you're generally going to be, and the better you're going to feel in general. Like you're not going to feel like shit, for a whole day, or drive home in silence for hours, because something went wrong.
Yeah, if nothing else, think about your buddy that you have to sit in the fucking car with on the way home, who doesn't want to deal with you being a broody little bitch because you had a bad
It's
afternoon.
just, it's just, it's everybody, our whole journey, and this is life, this is shooting, this is whatever, but our whole journey is solving obstacles that get in our way. Our whole, like, if you're not finding the next, and it's not, you don't have to look at it as a struggle or a problem or an issue or an obstacle. It's an opportunity. Like, it's an opportunity to be that much better than you were yesterday. Like, what's the next opportunity I have to start closing the gap from where I currently am to where I want to be and surpass it? That's the way you have to look at it. I think a lot of people don't know how to become an expert in their best performance. Right? So
Mean.
meaning we focus on what was missing, what went wrong, what can we do better, blah blah blah. But why, when, how often do people focus on what went right and why?
Oh, fucking hardly ever. That's like,
So
I
what, so
mean,
how can you expect to get more of your best performances in relation to your current ability level if you're not figuring out what went right and why it went right?
yeah.
Right? So something I do now, it's like every time I write down what went well and why. Every stage that I shoot, every training session that I have, what went right and why? Because what you're going to identify when you do it at enough of an interval, like frequent enough, you're going to identify common themes. Hey, this seems to get really good performance because you're going to find, I wrote it down again and again and again and again. That becomes the baseline for your best practices for your performance. Like, that's how I get my best performance. When I focus on X, I tend to get closer to what I want, right? And now what happens under a pressure situation? I know what gets me my best performance. So even though I feel a certain way, I'm able to know, hey, this, when I do this, this is going to get my best potential. Not enough people focus on that. That doesn't mean you ignore issues, by the way. It doesn't mean you ignore growth opportunities. Like,
Yeah.
you still have to see that. Like, you have to see that, but being able to understand what to become more of an expert in your best performance, like, that's also going to drive you forward to know, hey, listen, I can do this, right? And mental belief and is a huge, eliminating self-doubt is a huge component of becoming great in anything.
And I think people look at it as too much like a participation trophy. They're like, yeah, oh great, I did this well. Who cares? And I mean, look at it for the value. Like you just said, like you can start pulling data from it. You
Oh,
can
yeah.
look at it from a ones and zeros perspective and start pulling data from that and start measuring and predicting, I mean, to some degree, right? Future performance. So then you can get a better idea, like you said, going into, I mean, whether it's competitive shooting or whatever have you, right? Like
Anything.
what I
Life.
know I can rely on, and I want to say fall back to, but it gives you something to work off of rather than just what you're bad at.
Right. Because if you're always focusing on what you're bad at, you're going to get more of what you're bad at. Like, it's more likely to happen. Like, it's just the nature of performance and subconscious performance. Like the more you focus on what sucked and this and that and blah blah blah, like you're gonna more likely get it on the next thing that you do. You know what I mean? Like, and it comes, there's a lot more to it. Like, there's the self-image, which what you're imprinting in your self-image, like that's really what's determining what's happening. Like you could say, I sucked at this, but if you're really telling yourself, I'm better than what I'm doing now, that could actually work the opposite way. But most people aren't like that.
That self-imaging shit is not a joke.
No,
And I
it's
try
not.
explaining that to people, and they're like, "So you want me like?" And maybe I just do a bad job with it. I don't know. Like, so you want me to pretend to be my favorite YouTuber? I'm like, well, no. But what I am saying is, you see some of these guys perform at a really high level, and that's what you like. Usually, people like by their own words are telling me they want to be able to do. I'm like, self-imaging works. Like, it really does. Now, I'm not saying it's just gonna fix it overnight
You
immediately,
can't,
but.
yeah, you can't bullshit yourself totally. You have to believe that what you're saying is possible. So you can stretch the self-image, but if you tell yourself you're going to be the best shooter in the world in 6 months, like, is that likely? Unless you put a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous amount of effort in 6 months, going from a tactical guy to the best shooter in the world. It's not necessarily if you can't believe it, if you can't make the stretch to believe it, it's actually going to work the opposite. It's going to hurt you. So it's got to be enough. It's got to be a stretch, but it's got to be enough of a stretch that you still believe you can get there. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
I'd be genuinely surprised. I mean, you really will. Like, I didn't think that I'd ever be able to get, I mean, some of the stuff that I can do, which is not anything great, but a lot of guys talk about like a sub-second reload. 0.99, 0.98, where I hang out, is still a sub-second reload.
Oh
It's
yeah.
not like it's not 0.65, but I mean it's you know,
But
it sub-second.
0.65 is an exception, right? It's an exception. And I put a lot of time and effort into doing it. And is it really necessary? Yes and no. I learned how to be great at one thing, one of the best in the world at one thing, that can now translate into other things as I put the time and effort into it. Would I have picked that specific thing again? Probably not, just because it's not the most useful skill. Like it's cool, like especially in when I was shooting production where you do a couple reloads a stage, but in the bigger divisions, you're doing one reload maybe in a stage. So it's not as important, but what is important is the fact that I know how to do something like that. So the process just needs to be repeated enough times in the right places, again, identifying the gaps and closing them. And that's going to start to help create the next levels of progress that need to happen.
So I can stop working on reloads. I just have to start running bigger magazines, which is just
Oh.
like another one of those benefits to running like 2011s and double, like don't those things hold like 20 rounds?
A 9mm, a 2011 mag, they'll run 20 anywhere from 22 to 24.
Yeah, see, I'm over here fucking around with 17. That's the problem.
Well. Totally, totally, totally the problem. But I mean, listen, when it comes from a performance standpoint, getting a minimum standard is still useful. For reloads,
Oh,
it's really not a second.
absolutely.
A second is cool, but 1.2, even 1.3 is okay. Like it's not 100%. It's not as important as it used to be. I'll put it that
We
way.
spend a lot of time in our training group just on defining standards, not even like, hey, we saw, like whatever video of whatever guy's doing this. Now that has to be our standard too, but just, all right, let's try these drills and let's find out what our standard as a group, you find like some kind of an average should be with, rifles or pistols and things like that. And it's not like a ranking thing. I think some guys take it that way. It's just to like help identify as a, as a group of people who shoot together, like, hey, if we all try to get to this standard, then we can all get better together, or it gives us something to work towards. And usually not everybody's the best at one thing. Like, people have strengths, kind of like we were talking about earlier, and then they have weaknesses in other areas. It's just all kind of part of the process of getting better, and having something to measure yourself against is it's required. You have to.
And you have to be pushing yourself in one way or the other. So, like, even for instance, so one of the things I'm doing in my training is I'm pushing distance. So I'm pushing distance on hard targets. Like this morning, I'm shooting a Zebra tuxedo target. So like the both these are black. You only
Oh
have
yeah,
the
so
one. Yeah.
like a reduced A zone, is that what they
Not a
were?
reduced A zone, but if you imagine instead, like you only have this sliver available to you. I'm trying to do it like while I'm looking at
Oh,
myself.
like from the neck of the head box, whatever, like
Yep,
straight
all the way
down. Okay.
down. Yep, and then everything else is hardcover. So you only have the A zone available. Pretty much. A zone, C zone at the bottom, D zone at the bottom, C zone and A zone at the top. So you have this little sliver, right?
Yeah.
Sliver. And I'm shooting that at 33 yards. Right? And
Which
demanding
isn't, it's not super far, but when you talk about shrinking the target, like how we started the conversation.
well, understand the context too. I'm trying to do this quickly with transitions. I'm not aiming on the target. I'm drawing to it. I'm transitioning on and off of it. I'm moving onto it, right? Meaning I'm shooting, let's say a far target that has that an open target, a target similar to this, right? Then I'm shooting a quick 10-yard stack where it's like you have the bottom target's open. You have the top target essentially has what would be the head box. And then I'm moving to a different location and I'm shooting that target and an 8-inch piece of steel at that same distance. Right. So it's
Yeah.
layers of difficulty being added on top of it. Right.
I need to get into more of that stuff, like different looks and like, 'cause I mean, you can get them in dry targets too and everything. And I find that even just from a mental exercise, like being able to not just treat every target exactly the same, there's
Correct.
value to processing that.
Can you see what that looks like?
Yeah, where you kind of have them
You see that?
stacked
That's the
three deep.
target in the back there.
Yeah.
All right.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, over here saying 33 yards isn't that far. And then when you put it in context, like,
For a
well, it's not.
rifle, it's not bad.
Yeah.
That's an easier target for a rifle, but for a pistol, like do it next time you go to the range, do something like put a target out like that and try to do it quickly. It's and that's where that shot calling part really, the dot lift shot, it is amazing. Like, because once you get that confidence to understand with a good amount of certainty where shots are going, it becomes a lot. You make up shots happen like that. You're not really surprised by as much. And it is a big game changer. Another thing people can do, you're gonna like this too, you guys with your little group. Take a target that you've shot up already. And then put it in front of a clean target.
To like block it off or
Yep. So you have a sh so for instance, we have this. We shot, we shoot our first target, we shoot it up a little bit, and then we take a clean target and we put the shot up target like this, and then behind it, we turn the target around and we have it behind clean. Now, every time you shoot that target, you have to actually call your shots based on what you're seeing. Because you don't know where the hits are.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so it's
So
kind of
you'll
like
see that, yeah,
map.
you'll get the accountability aspect because the clean target on the back will show your hits, but you won't be able to see that from the front. And anybody who's doing this, never mind for competition purposes of calling shots better, but for defensive purposes too, right? If
Yeah,
you're gonna, if you're
accountability.
gonna, if you're gonna, God forbid, get into in a defensive encounter, especially someone who's wearing a dark shirt, you're not gonna know where your shots went.
True.
You're not gonna know. Like, you have to be able to know based on what you're seeing, the visual connection between where the gun is, where the dot is, and where that dot is lifting or whatever. The visual reference is gonna tell you where the shots went. Right? You can't
That's
look at the
cool.
guy and say, yep, I hit him there. You're not gonna know. So that's why this becomes very important from that aspect too.
I'm gonna try that shit. I'm definitely gonna try that.
I did it for about 3 to 4 months with all my targets for the entire session.
Damn.
And it's a game changer. Like when once you apply what I talked about with either trigger break, trigger lift, or dot lift, like, and you apply it when you have a target that you don't know, you can't guarantee hits by looking at it. Now you're going to start making those connections much faster. And the goal is to score your target before you look at it.
Oh, and like, yeah, and then you just compare it, like where you thought you would
Were
be.
you close within a fist? Were you about where you thought you were?
Yeah.
Right, and that's gonna just it's just gonna make you more aware. Doing that for a couple months, you're gonna have this awareness, and less and less is gonna surprise you. Less and less surprises you. The more confident you could be when you've made an acceptable hit, the more confident you could be when you've made an acceptable hit, the quicker you can start to initiate the next sequences to start getting to the next shot faster.
Yeah, and
That
then that
cascades.
leads to that the speed that everyone is chasing.
Right. Right. And you know, part of that speed is just being able to process it fast enough.
Yeah,
Right? That's where
that's.
like those concentration grids come and came in handy for me. Like it really it built my bandwidth to be able to see it. Now you have to train and apply it so that you understand, you're able to take what you've developed, your brain and your vision and your processing to do, and now put it in the context of shooting.
And that's on a course of fire where you're trying to move quickly. Like I run into it all the time. We do weekly training for CQB, and we'll give guys like the wave to like open up so they can enter a doorway. And you'll like it's just you see people at different stages of the game where they process and how they just get hung up on the most elementary of functions because they'll sit there and they'll just stare at you. I'm like,
Yeah, I've
come
seen
on, wait for that neuron to fire, and it's like kitchen timer goes off. It's like, oh, there it is. And they pick the gun up and it's like, yeah, you'll get there. You
that.
just gotta work on it.
But again, it goes back to what we were originally talking about. Push yourself out of your comfort zone speed-wise to do it a little quicker than you're comfortable with. You'll know when you have the right level of effort when you're making small mistakes.
Yeah.
That's when you know your brain is getting overloaded just enough. The mistake won't be catastrophic, but there'll be little things. You know, something as simple as like there's a little bumble on the reload. I might, if I was doing a big stage, I might shoot a target sequence out of order. Like when I'm pushing the appropriate level of speed, those little things will happen occasionally. And you know what you say when it happens? Good.
Yeah,
Because I
you know
know
you're
I'm,
going fast enough.
I know that if I continue doing this, this will become the new normal, and then I can go to the next level. I could find the next dragon to slay, the next boss.
Right.
That's all progress is. It doesn't matter what we're doing,
Yeah,
right?
it's
Find the
all
next
powerful.
challenge,
Like,
and
right.
welcome the next challenge with good. When I go to 44 degrees, you know, in a week or two, in my cold plunge, like good, like you know. It does sound funny when I'm talking to myself like I used to sound like a crazy person, like, oh, I can't wait to go in this cold water, like can't wait to freeze my nuts off, like a whole bunch of, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. Now I'm nice and calm, like I got this woosah thing going on, but
I'll get there eventually. I'm gonna try it. It's just the cold shower thing. I know that there's because I've talked to like Ian from Rune Nation about it and stuff, and like he's like a big proponent. He'd sent me a bunch of stuff, and that's why I tried it. I talked to him, and I'm like, man. I gotta work up to it. I gotta
So I'm
work
gonna
up to
I'll tell you how I started, right?
it.
I started with two simple things. Every morning, go out in a pair of shorts or walk out, and this started like from winter, you know, maybe February, January. I'd walk outside and I'd stand outside for like 2 minutes in the cold air.
Okay.
Just so I get used to it, like, you know, okay. Starts to become no big deal, wakes you up nice. Like when there was ice on the ground, I'd stand on the ice, like just to, you know, just to get a feel. And then at night when I take a shower, like
Yeah.
when I'm done with the shower, like you know how you open up the door and you know, you grab the towel, you bring it in, and you close the door because you want to stay warm. I would just air dry. Like I would start air drying because you get that chill and you're like, oh, right. And that's how that whole thing started. And then in April or May, when I finally got my setup, again, that's I started with just hose water. That was 60, 65 degrees, whatever it was. And then we just each week go down a little bit at a time. Little bit of time. Then I got an insulated tub because I was having a problem keeping the water cold. Even with the chiller setup I have. And now, you know, it stays in the mid-40s right now. And we're gonna work it down like hopefully into the high 30s before wintertime, and then see how that goes. Yeah, I mean it's that face says it
Oh,
all. It's,
it's so
but
fucking miserable.
it's not miserable. Honestly, like it's not as miserable as people make it sound. It is uncomfortable. Every time you do it, you kind of want to do everything else before you actually go do it. But for me, it's like I have on my watch, I have the timer. So once I set the clock and I hit the button to start the timer.
Yeah.
Gunner knows what that means. As soon as I like it's go time. Second I start, I got 10 seconds to get in that water. I do a little bit of breathing, like the Wim Hof breathing, right? That helps me like prepare. And then as I get in, like it's now I have a step up and I step into the seat and then I sit down. Breathe out when I step in, breathe in as I'm sitting down, and then it's just focus on the breathing for the first 20 seconds. And then after that, I use that time to actually visualize my best performances.
Oh, I mean, that's a good use of the time. I mean, while you're sitting there, try to think
Right.
about something other than
Especially
the
while you're dis
important.
especially while you're uncomfortable.
Right.
Like I'm able to kind of visualize what my best performances look like and relive them over and over again. Occasionally I'll sit there, like yesterday I sat there just silent, like because I have to be able to be in the moment and be able to, hey, this is what it is. I can handle this. But once you're in there 15, 20, 25 seconds, it starts to kind of like you're just there, like just
Yeah,
hanging out,
you
hanging out,
settle a little
freezing my nuts off, like,
bit.
and then you get out, you feel like you feel good afterward. But yeah, no, it's that's every morning. And once you start to understand what the benefits outweigh the little bit of discomfort you experience, now you start to reframe it in your mind, so it actually becomes something. As much as it's not, you don't look forward to the beginning of it, but you look forward to what it does for you.
Yeah, the benefit
Second
and
and
yeah.
third order consequences, as people call it. You know,
Sure.
the first order consequences, I'm fucking freezing and
Right.
whatever. The second and third order consequences, I feel better. My body, I have more energy. I have less inflammation. My body moves better. I also air dry too, by the way, outside. So yeah, I don't like as soon as I get out, like I do stuff. I don't just dry off. Now, right now it's in the, 50s, low 60s, high 50s, where I'm at. So it's not terribly uncomfortable yet. But I'm going to continue that practice as much as I can.
Yeah, we're about that here. I'm in Southeast Michigan. I
Yep.
like high today was like 70, 73. So when I get, yeah, it's like low 60s,
This
59
one.
maybe. So.
And again, it's perfect now because it's slowly getting colder, so I can get adapted to it without too much of a shock.
Yeah.
Like this morning was 55, and
That's
I went in
terrible.
at like 9 o'clock.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I mean,
So
yeah, I mean,
it's
I'm still not excited to try that, but I mean, like it does sound more approachable.
little bit of time. Those breathing methods, those that that'll help. That'll help a lot. And the way Wim Hof specifically talks about cold showers, I think you'll find, like he says, like don't you don't force it. Like you don't force going in there and shock yourself. Like that's not necessarily good for you. So when I heard that, I'm like, well, let me try to like be calm getting into it. And that's actually been a lot better since I've done that. Not that it was bad in the first place, but it was like this big, like breathing crazy and talking crazy. And now it's just like, well, I just get in and hang out.
A
Like,
little more normalized.
yeah, that helped. That definitely helped. And I shared that with my group too for that reason. So
Well, right on, man. You know what? It does not, it has not, it does not feel like it's been an hour and 15 minutes. It really doesn't. We're kind of at the time mark here, and always great to talk with you and get into more of this stuff, because for as much as I took away from the first conversation, there's like a ton to get into. And I know you've got your accelerator program, which I know there were changes to that. Where can people, if you want to go ahead and just throw out the website and what you got going on,
I'll share it
for
with you
people that
right
are
now.
coming out from this conversation wanting to learn more, figure this out for themselves.
Absolutely. So we have an application process going on now. Our accelerator now has 143 members in it, and it's going to continue growing. As we start to add more to it, we've added 12 more videos aside from, I don't know, we have 40, 50 pre-recorded, not pre-recorded, but recorded calls. Bunch of special guests coming up. So we just had Mason Lane last week. We got Henning Wahlgren, so of Henning Group, coming on this week. Robert Vogel next week. I have a couple other people in the works, and it's grown fast. The community itself has been one of the big X factors. I think anybody that joins into the community will find that there's a lot of positivity and encouragement, right? Everybody's willing to ask questions. Everybody's willing to share what they're learning and help other people. The
That's
positivity
huge.
encouragement, like I mean, they even inspire me to do more and try to do more work. It's been super awesome there. And like I said, it's just constantly evolving. So I have let me even check this here. Actually, one membership request. No, that's someone different. So we have suggestions here. I just want to see how many topics so far. I've done that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. We have like another 25 video requests that I'll be filming over the course of the next couple months.
Wow.
Those will get added more to the classroom. So it's just constantly evolving. And it's been a great rewarding experience for both students and myself. So we'll see how it continues to go. But like I said, we're at 143 now. We've sold it out every time we've opened it up. We're going to probably move to a more monthly subscription, and open enrollment all the time soon. Probably application
Oh,
based.
cool.
We got like 40 applications over the past couple months, past month or two, actually.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's been working out well, man.
Good stuff. Yeah. I mean, any guys listening, if you're, I mean, looking to level up, really take things past where you're at, and I highly recommend looking into it, and I'll include it in the show notes, obviously. But appreciate the time, man. It's always great. The conversations are awesome, and God, I mean, I hope one of these days I get over that hump. I just like have that breakthrough. I'll be able to send the message, be like, it finally fucking happened. It'll get there. It'll
It
get
takes
there.
time, man. If you accept that it'll happen and you put the work in, it will happen. And of course, and this is for anybody listening. If you guys want, you guys are always welcome to reach out with questions. You as well, Austin. Questions, videos. Feel free to reach out, share. I'll give you whatever feedback. I'll help you as best I can. That's regardless of whether someone's in the program or not. Like, I want to help everybody.
Right on, man. It's all good stuff. All good stuff. So, thank you, sir. This was great. It's outstanding. Honestly, I hope people took a, I would think people took a lot away from this. I did. And I kind of had an idea going into it. What I thought it was going to be. Appreciate it, man. And, we'll be in touch. Hopefully we can do this again in another
Absolutely.
couple months or something, man. Yeah.
Actually, what we should do is if you have a lot of feedback on this podcast, maybe grab some Q&A and we can start answering questions for other
There you
people.
go. Do that. I'll get Josh
Oh.
on here with us and get into all of it. It'll be a good time.
That'll be a lot of fun, man. All right, Austin, it's a pleasure as always, my friend.
It's seriously always such an incredible learning experience every time I sit down and talk with Rob. And I hope you guys enjoyed that. There's a lot of information there that I know you'll find to be beneficial and to be helpful. And if you're looking to get into competitive shooting or even just to improve, like I cannot recommend Rob and his content enough. He's just one of the most intelligent people I've ever spoken with, and I've had the great fortune of working with so many folks right through this podcast, and then even more people when you're just talking about overall intelligence, right? Through like my day job, my career in finance, and there's some tremendously bright people there, obviously. And Rob, I certainly rank up there. We had a great conversation that you guys were all able to listen to there, and then we even got to talk for a little bit after we were recording and getting into books and self-improvement stuff and like leadership and personality types and just all kinds of stuff. Like the just great discussion there, you guys. And since our last episode where I had Rob on, I have been able to improve using some of the things that he talks about in his video. The little things, the little tips or technique adjustments, they actually do go a long way when you incorporate them into your practice. Things like, for me, big ones were like, hey, bring the gun down to your magazine when you're reloading. Reloading was something I focused on a lot to try and improve because I was so inconsistent with it. But something like that, starting on the B of the beep versus the end of the beep, when you start initiating motion and things and all that kind of stuff. It's really, really helpful. It sounds like very small things. And that's, I think, the point, right? Is that people's problems when they're trying to increase their overall capability, or I should say their overall performance, their output, right? It's not typically one huge, like, gaping problem. It is more often than not, at least in my experiences, right, for whatever that's worth to you guys, it is usually several smaller problems, which then manifest themselves into a larger, you know, issue, in which case it's like time bleed if you're talking about performing, trying to perform something as quickly as you can, whether it's like a reload or a draw or transitions or whatever, speaking specifically in the context of shooting. So really, you know, really cool discussion here. I mean, what I'm going to look forward to, and we mentioned at the end there, is going to try and actually set up like a Q&A session. It would be really cool. Get Josh, you know, with his very particular brand of autism on here, try and do like a three-way conversation where you can get into some of these questions and talk about, right, I mean, everything from diagnosis to dry fire. And I love that we got into the dry fire discussion, honestly, because for as much as we still talk about it in this community, and as much as so many of us still promote it as a cost-effective tool and a way to get better, we are battling the same issues that society is with people and a distinct lack of an attention span. But if you can overcome that, dry fire is great. You learn so much about yourself and about your abilities, and you can do so much. And it actually ends up being very therapeutic when you get to a certain point with it as well, where you look forward to, you know, the time working on target transitions or reloads with transitions or movement and things like that. And it's outstanding stuff. So I'm really happy we stopped and talked on that while we were in the middle of the discussion and things, and built that into kind of what we were talking about there. So it's a great conversation. Always a pleasure with Rob. Like I said, look at his website. It's robepifania.net. Really easy to remember. He has free drills up there. So all you guys are thinking, I don't know if I want to sign up. Sign up for his free drills. It's like some regular paced out emails. You get notifications and stuff. He has some great videos that you get access to. I know there's a couple of videos on the Orion Training Group YouTube channel, where you can actually go through reloads and some of these things that Rob talks about, like dry fire and things like that. And if you guys like what you see, then sign up for the accelerator class. You know, put in an application, try and get into that stuff. It works. You know, he knows what he's talking about. He's a really, really good shooter, you guys, and there's a reason why he's, you know, on the cadre at Orion. Honestly, it's not even past that. I don't want to make it sound like being one of the staff members of Orion is the do-all end-all. Obviously, they all have my respect, and I hold them all in high regard. But, you know, his own accomplishments and his own accolades as a competitive shooter. So, but appreciate you guys hanging out and listening to the podcast. You know, things have been a little bit, you know, here and there. We, you know, cancellations and crazy schedules and all kinds of things going on. Now, the nice part about the end of the year is that things start to slow down. So we're able to schedule things a little bit better. We're able to push out a little bit more information, a little bit more content. We're able to do a little bit more. Now that, you know, that's the unfortunate part, is that the summer ends, the warm weather is gone. You know, we're past our trip to HTA, which we look forward to and everything. But now, as we kind of head into the holidays, things slow down a little bit. We got a little bit more time. There's less like travel for my day job and things like that. So lots of good stuff that is scheduled for the next several weeks here on the podcast. So stay tuned. Again, if you guys are looking for more, we have exclusive episodes on our Patreon page. We release those on a pretty regular basis. There's multiple posts per week on, you know, exclusive episodes and blog posts, videos. You can actually request information if there's stuff that you guys want to see specifically. You want to see us go over different things, can do that through the Patreon page. And then, you know, that comes back to support us and everything that we do with Prepared Mindset. So thank you guys so much for hanging out this week. We'll have more next week. Stay safe out there, everybody. And until next time, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.